Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone in the franchise world. My name is Paul Segretto, and this is Franchise Today. Wow, it's great to be back after the holiday season. Happy New Year to all. I believe 2011 is going to be a great year for franchising, despite what some of the skeptics and naysayers believe. Sure, we're still facing tight credit markets, and of course that will be an obstacle for many, but I also believe there's a mentality shift going on whereby many within franchising are saying, we still need to grow, not just survive. To that end, I'm excited about attending the upcoming IFA convention in Las Vegas next month. I believe it'll be one of the best IFA conventions ever. By the way, if you haven't already made plans to attend, please do so today by visiting Franchise Essentials site at fmdpro.com and click on the IFA 2011 logo, which will take you directly to the IFA convention registration page. Looking forward to seeing everyone in Vegas. Speaking of the IFA, let's venture into our regular segment, the IFA Corner. IFA yesterday commended leaders in the U.S. House of Representatives who will soon vote to fully repeal the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act of 2010 and urged other lawmakers to do likewise. Contact and urge your members of Congress today to enact measures that save money, control rising insurance costs, and expand choices for employers and their employees. Take action before the expected January 12th House vote and find more information on IFA's advocacy efforts from IFA Advocacy Director Meredith Nethercutt. As many are aware, the IFA continues to push to jumpstart lending. Well, more than $10.3 billion in loan guarantees supporting more than $12 billion in lending to small businesses were approved by the Small Business Administration between September 27th and December 31st, 2010. SBA Administrator Karen Mills has announced between December 18th and the 24th, the SBA supported a record high $1.95 billion in small business loans, the highest dollar volume since the SBA began tracking its weekly loan volumes. Last month, Congress extended the SBA's authority to continue the loan enhancements through March 4th. That's certainly good news. And the IFA, of course, always does a great deal away from Capitol Hill. For instance, the IFA Educational Foundation provides prospective franchisees with a comprehensive resource to help guide them through the process of business ownership. An Introduction to Franchising, a new publication sponsored by PepsiCo Food Service, includes general information about franchising, as well as descriptions of the different kinds of franchises, the legal aspects to consider, details about the franchise disclosure document, information on how to begin a search for the right franchise, cost considerations, and a guide to determining whether franchising is right for the individual. Again, I'd like to remind our listeners along these lines that the ISA has recently launched their new design website. I believe it's been remarkably improved, especially for individuals exploring franchising, because now visitors to the IFA site will find easier access, new functionality, and enhanced graphics to simplify the search for franchising. The website offers retrieval of information about IFA programs, etc. If you haven't already done so, they've done a lot of good work on this. Go online, www.franchise.org.com, take a look at it. You know, coming out of the holiday season, franchise news seems to be a little slow to report. So as we're all a bit tired of the regurgitation of the continuing CNBC franchise documentary saga, let's leave the news segment a bit light today. You know, yesterday I heard from Nancy Weingartner, editor at Franchise Times, and Nancy indicated the January issue of Franchise Times should be hitting your mailboxes this week. You know, but moving forward, they're currently working on the February issue. She indicated they're taking a look at the QSR industry plus some green franchises. And she also said that for some reason she's been running across more than usual fun stories involving franchises, which will populate Franchise Times upfront and current sections. Of course, we always thank Nancy for her insight and updates. You know, in preparation for today's show, co-producer Joe Caruso and I were discussing the new Starbucks logo, which by now is all over the news. I shared the announcement on my own social sites and received comments and opinion about the new logo. One person wrote, "While they call it gutsy, I call it insane. They instantly lose a brand recognition and definitely not in favor of a cooler, hipper design. The new logo reminds me of a knockoff of the real logo. I think in an already struggling economy, this is not the time to change. Just my opinion." Another chimed in, "Stupid move. Give it 6 months and someone will get fired." Well, Joe and I have our opinion as well. So in our ever-popular segment, Are You Kidding Me?, Franchise Today singles out Starbucks' new logo. Starbucks assembled the smartest people in the world in one room, and after the brightest one of all noticed all the Apple logoed devices, said, "Hey, let's do that." And the new wordless, coffee-less siren face logo was born. Holy cow. Well, Franchise Today has written a letter to Starbucks asking three questions. Dear Starbucks, 1, saw your new logo. Did anyone tell you about New Coke or The Gap? 2, are we now supposed to refer to you as the coffee formerly known as Starbucks? And 3, Coca-Cola thought your new logo idea was so good, you're eliminating Coke and Coca-Cola from all their branding. Are you kidding me? Well, you know, in franchising, recruiting, hiring, and retaining minimum wage employees is a monumental task for businesses, large or small. It's not uncommon for managers to fill the same position in their workforce 2, 3, 4, or more times a year because minimum wage workers don't work out or they move on to something better. Minimum wage workers sometimes don't show up for work because they don't feel like it, or they can be rude to customers, or they may find other ways of making a supervisor's life difficult. Does it really have to be that way? Well, the answer is no, as you'll hear from my guest today, Dave Melton. Dave is a successful multi-unit Domino's franchisee and author of the book, Hire the American Dream, from which I pulled the passage I just read. Dave, welcome to Franchise Today.
Thank you, Paul. I'm excited to be here. I'm grateful for the opportunity to talk about the guys that work in our business.
Well, it's a fascinating book. As I told you right before the show, it had me up to 4-something this morning reading through it. I couldn't put it down, and I'm anxious to definitely go over it with you, and definitely am happy you agreed to be a guest on Franchise Today.
My pleasure.
You start off in the book, Domino's Pizza in New York City, coaching frontline workers to succeed in the world's toughest pizza market. And, of course, being a Brooklyn-born New Yorker, I grew up, of course, in the belly of the beast, if you would, the birthplace of pizza in America. And, growing up with a lot of the pizza places on the corner, you know, owned by people in the neighborhood, I marvel at your intuition and drive and vision into taking Domino's into New York City. What was it like bringing Domino's right into the belly of the beast?
Well, you know, you've probably heard this from a lot of new franchisees before. If I knew what I knew later on, I might not have been able to do it. But it's pretty amazing when you pick up everything you have, you sell everything you've got to raise enough money to get your business started, and, when it becomes a basically sink or swim situation, then you work your tail off. And the part of it about how we ended up in Manhattan, I had a friend of mine that grew up in Westport, Connecticut, and, you know, he spent a lot of time in Manhattan. There were Domino's Corporate had built a store in the downtown part of Manhattan, and it lasted 2 or 3 years. They spent too much money building it. They kept running supervisors and managers in from the Midwest, and the delivery guys would just eat them up and spit them out. But I had looked at a few other markets. I'd worked as a vice president of operations. I'd been with Domino's already for about 8 or 9 years. So I think I had a good background for being able to deal with a lot of the challenges that came up. But I'd never been to Manhattan before. And my friend said, how about franchising in Manhattan? And I had looked at Hickory, North Carolina. I'd been out in Long Island. I'd looked at Plymouth, Massachusetts. All of these were markets that were possible, you know, opportunities for me. But when I got into Manhattan, basically, I went around and I ate pizzas at 20 or 30 places all over the city. And I didn't experience any pizzas, and I certainly didn't experience any service levels that I thought, you know, this is nothing that I couldn't compete with. We're every bit as good as these guys. And the other part of it is just standing in the middle of Third Avenue and looking up and down at thousands of windows and just knowing that all of those people are going to be having a pizza delivered at some point. And, you know, I was just, I wasn't afraid of it. And we had a good location. And as time has gone by, really, we found out that, as you probably know, most of the people who live in Manhattan are from all across the country. They've already eaten Domino's pizzas where they went to college or where they grew up. So really, our customer base may be a little bit different than in Brooklyn and the Bronx. But, you know, most people had already had Domino's pizza, knew exactly what to expect, and we were able to make a great business of it. Now there's, in the New York DMA, I think over 250 Domino's pizza stores. We're the largest Domino's pizza market in the nation. And, you know, a New York pizza these days is quite likely to be a Domino's pizza.
Well, that's, yeah, it is phenomenal growth in that area because you became a franchisee there in 1989, correct?
That's right. We opened in December of 89, so... You know, we've just passed another birthday. Golly, it's you know, when you sign a 15-year lease and you feel like that's forever in the future, and that was 6 years ago that one finished up. But it's been a great run, and business is still going very well.
Well, you know, it's funny you mention, you know, opening up in December because as Joe Caruso, my co-producer, and I were talking about this over the last couple of days, and I was going over that with him, you know, some of the, you know, most of your delivery, if not all the delivery, correct me if I'm wrong, is actually done by bicycle. Is that correct?
It's, well, other than what's carried out or if it's close enough to walk to it, we deliver every bit of it on bicycles, which only makes sense in the New York City market. Of course, there's billions of dollars of commerce done on bicycles. There's no place to park at our store. There's no place to park at the customer's house. And the density of the market, to paint a picture for you, the store at 89th and 3rd Avenue delivers south to 82nd, north to 96th, so that's 7 blocks up and down, from Central Park to the East River. There are, in that market, 55,000 addresses. If you sit in Yankee Stadium, that's how many seats there are. You mm-hmm. can ride a bike to any one of those addresses from our store in 3 or 4 minutes.
Well, you know, talking about December, I mean, you just came off a major blizzard on a weekend that's probably typically a busy weekend for pizza delivery. How did that all transpire?
Well, all hands on deck, and it's obviously harder to ride a bicycle when there's a blizzard going on, but, you know, New York City doesn't stop for anything, as you well know. We went on foot for some of it. We remained open for carryouts. We were actually very busy, and we handled most of that business. I mean, certainly there's some... at some point it gets there that you can't ride a bike, but that city gets out of snow pretty fast. So once the city comes through and cleans up the streets and the store owners have cleaned up the sidewalk, we're back in action.
Right. Yeah, I saw the video of the guy skiing down what was it, Park Avenue, tied to the back of a car. I thought that was pretty interesting.
Anything you can get away with, I guess.
Yeah. You know, they're just, you know, thinking about it, you know, bicycles, New York City, you know, that the rents, of course, are very high in New York, and square footage is at a premium. Just the logistical aspects of the business that you faced, I mean, just with the bicycle, where do you put all the bicycles? How many bicycles do you have? I mean, that in itself just has to be something that, you know, very few, even Domino's franchisees, ever ran across, because there's not many cities that are like New York City.
No, there's not. And, you know, it's where there's a will, there's a way, and there's a solution to every problem. And if you look in the back of our stores, and obviously over 20 years, we've figured out a lot of that stuff. But it's not easy for our delivery people to bring their bikes back and forth from home. Most of them live in Astoria or Bronx or Queens or in the boroughs. So we've worked out a way for them to leave their bikes at the store. We have hooks that hang off of the ceiling, and they'll hang their bikes up in the back of the store. And that way they're ready to go. And it's interesting. Every store sort of ends up with a guy who is the bicycle mechanic and, you know, helps the other guys keep their bikes in top condition. And you know, it's just a you always have to be careful, of course. If you've ever seen some of those bicycle locks that say this is guaranteed everywhere except for New York City, there's a reason for that. And it's usually the new guy with the little flimsy chain that gets his bike stolen right away. The old pros that we have know that you can't leave your bike unlocked or go 15 feet away from it without locking it up. But it's just a reality. You got to deal with it.
Absolutely. You know, one of the subtitles in your book, Bring Entrepreneurial Spirit and Opportunity to Your Minimum Wage Workers. What was your thought behind that? How did that evolve?
Well, pretty quickly, I learned that in order for me to be successful, I took that I sort of flipped over the triangle, and I'm at the bottom as a resource, and then I rely on my general managers, who are resources to our employees, at the top, and at the very top level are our customers. And when, you know, this is really one of my basic philosophies, which is the customer's experience is the most important part of our business. Secondly, I have to convince that front line of employees, those minimum wage employees, that the better job that they do, the better job that they do giving our customers a delightful experience, the more money they're going to make. The more transactions we do, the busier our store is, the more money they make. When it's tied directly, and when they get that, and when they see, hey, I'm making more money when I'm on the road delivering pizzas than when I'm sitting in the back folding boxes, hey, they're here to make money. So the motivation of getting a customer to say, wow, that was great, and having that customer call back sooner and tell their friend, when that frontline minimum wage, and, you know, the minimum wage part is something I do struggle with a little bit, because nobody in my business makes minimum wage. That's what we start them at, but as their value increases to this company, then we increase their wages pretty quickly. So that customer's experience, and the customer's happy, then that makes our delivery team happy. If our delivery team is happy, then that makes my managers happy. And if the managers are happy, that makes me happy.
That's a very straight line philosophy. And talking about philosophy, you know, one of your chapters, I think chapter 4, Teach Philosophy and Opportunity First, really made me think back to my earlier years in franchising at a franchisor that I was aware of that I will not mention on the air. It's not fair. They certainly can't defend themselves. But there was a multi-unit franchisee with them that was very, very successful and almost a model of success that every other franchisee tried to emulate, and yet it was so drastically different than from, you know, your philosophy in that, you know, you indicate make your vision contagious. I mean, this franchisee did so much of the opposite, and I guess it's a reason why he was successful only for a short period of time until he ran into all kinds of you know, personnel and labor issues, which derailed his entire operation. But he would even he had a Mercedes and a Jaguar and what have you and a big home, but yet he had this old beat up pickup truck and he put on these old clothes and go to the business and didn't want anybody to be part of his vision or know that he had attained a wealth status and what have you. And yet when I was reading your book, you talked about, you know, you and your wife, Angie, inviting your managers. You do your meetings at your apartment in the living room. So obviously they get to see your success and feel your success, which goes along right with the vision. They're able to think ahead and see ahead for themselves and project ahead. And, of course, you indicate in your book you have your meetings up at your home in Connecticut. What is that, on an annual basis? And it's just giving the opportunity for everyone in your organization to really be able to project. I think it's just a phenomenal way of sharing your vision, but also making that vision theirs. How did that all evolve? How did that take place? Give us a little bit of insight into that.
Well, part of my role is motivational, inspirational, you know, all of that sort of stuff. One of the things that I am most proud of is that seven guys that have started or worked with me in our Domino's business in Manhattan have gone on to become franchisees, and they amongst them own over 40 stores now. So the American dream, they're living it. They're experiencing it. And the guys who work in my company all know who these people are. We celebrate them. They come to our meetings also. So I think that one of my most important roles and one of my functions in our company is to have a philosophy and to make sure that every single person in our business knows what it is. The purpose of the mission statement of our business is that is one of the things that I expect every person in our business to know, and all these things you can relate back to that statement, which is having a busy pizza store with the phones ringing, pizza's ovens full, delivery people are hustling, and giving customers a great experience, and that our team members are being well rewarded for that. And when you circle back around, everything that we do touches base back on that philosophy. So I thought one of the parts in the book that I like the best is start at the beginning. And I think sometimes people don't start at the beginning. You have to give people a base of this is where all the details, and these are basic tenets of the things that we believe in and the philosophies. And then start dealing with the details and some of the other more esoteric stuff later on. But if it gets back to that customer and the customer's experience and teaching these delivery people that one of the things that they're supposed to do is make a customer's day. People call Domino's to solve a problem. What are we going to do for dinner? My guys are walking into a party. Be a part of it. Have some personality. Be there with those people and make their experience fun. That's what we're delivering. Be a part of it. And when that customer has a great experience And the people that are there with them, typically you've got a few pizzas going around, you've got a group of people, they may or may not be at home, if they're at work, what are they going to think of when they want to have another experience like that, get a pizza delivered?
Sure, excellent philosophy. You know, you wrote in the book, the face of the American entry-level workforce is changing throughout the nation. Frontline employees who will work for minimum wages are increasingly coming from the immigrant population, especially in densely populated urban markets such as New York City, Atlanta, Miami, Houston, and Los Angeles. And was focusing on the recent immigrant workforce, was that something that you planned from the start, or was it an evolution?
It was totally an evolution. And, you know, the first year or two, and this is probably typical also in a lot of new franchise businesses. Now, I think I had a leg up because I had, you know, run Team Washington and with Frank Meeks in Virginia for some years and worked with some other franchisees in senior operational positions. So I knew this business already. But getting into Manhattan and, you know, you hire people, you go through your training classes, we're all pumped up and we're doing it. But it took a little while before I landed on and had some people start to work for me that, you know, had more of a, hey, I like what's going on here. I'm going to throw in with this guy because I like what he's saying, and I'm going to work hard and be honest and adopt his philosophies. I had plenty of people that didn't, and which helped me come up with another one of my philosophies that's helped me a lot, which is it's not the guy that you fire that makes you miserable. It's the guy that you should have fired and didn't that makes you miserable.
Yeah,
so
true.
You got to move people out if they're not part of your team. And this is another philosophy that I have, which is if somebody isn't part of the team and isn't giving that customer that great experience, they're costing everybody in our business money. You know, if you do something that causes a customer or a potential customer to leave or to not call us, you've just cost every one of us money. So behave yourself all the time. You're on stage at all times. You represent Domino's Pizza every minute that you've got your uniform on, and even, you know, when you don't, people know that you work for Domino's. Be a part of it. Sell pizzas all the time. The more pizzas we sell, the more money you make.
And that's where it all comes down to. I mean, that's the objective, to make money, right?
You got to do sales, and in these economic times, holy smokes, things are costing so much more. Commodities are going up. Insurance, rents are going through the roof. And there's this whole legal arena of things that you better make sure you know what labor and hour wage laws are in your state, and you know, make sure that you're doing things right, because somebody can come along and take a big chunk out of your rear end for things that you may have thought you were doing right, but if you're not, or somebody can interpret it that you're not, it'll cost you.
Well, you know, that brings up a good point, because you do have to have an understanding across the board about a lot of different issues. And taking it back to a fundamental point here, hiring this, you know, recent immigrant, obviously you ran through language issues, and yet you've created an organization that creates opportunities for your workers to become entrepreneurs themselves and franchisees within Domino's. So, I mean, this has just been a long process of teaching, educating, motivating them, and really giving them a complete understanding from A to Z. How did you get past
one thing that I have found, and that this is one of the really fun things about my job, is that people who are new to America, and or minimum wage employees who are new to the workforce, my experience with most of them has been that these people are they're blank slate. Teach me how it's done. I want to experience this American dream. What do I do? How does it work? And when you can sit down with them, and it's great. In a small business, you can be nimble, you can react, you can your feedback about how you're doing is immediate. Your sales are up, your costs are in line, your service is good. You know right away. And so the fun thing about it all is that you get people here and you can teach them, and they don't know any other way. They say, okay, I get it, and I'm on it. So that has been my experience with people, and it's incredible to hire somebody who, you know, either was from another country or they're shy, they're standing in a corner with their hands in their pockets and they don't know what to do, and everybody's bustling around all busy. And 3 weeks later, it's like they're in the most important spot in the store, giving directions and hustling and just part of the team and having a blast. And when you see that happening, you know, that is just one of those things that just makes you feel good all through.
Definitely an aha moment. You know, but too many people out there, business owners, are very closed-minded. You bring up a great point, I think, and a fine point to what you were talking about. You know, in the book you write, some people think that just because a person is struggling with the language, they are somehow less intelligent or less educated. And too often than not, we know that many people can't get past that barrier, and they think that somebody, just because they're struggling with the language, is less educated or less capable of doing a good job. So kudos to you for getting past that. I think that definitely is a very strong point, which of course leads me to, you know, respect, because you know, this is just respect for a worker. It doesn't matter whether they are a minimum wage worker or somebody making $250,000 a year. It's common respect. You know, Joe Caruso, my co-producer, I mentioned I discuss a lot and focus a lot on respect, and respect as business owners to employees, but even respect as from franchisors to franchisees. And I'm not only talking about, you know, personal respect, but, you know, as to franchisees' investment. They often have it all on the line, their life savings. I don't think a lot of franchisors get this from the top down. And yet, you've done it through language barriers, through cultural differences or lack of understanding. How important is respect in your organization when you're dealing with potential cultural differences of people that are working today, coming from different countries, not to mention religious aspects, political aspects? I mean, there's a lot in a very closed quarters in
well,
a small
you know room. I think that I don't make that many contacts directly with customers. I've got people in my stores who are answering telephones, making pizzas, and who are face to face with the customer. And if I've got a guy who isn't feeling good about being at work, then he's probably not going to feel great about, you know, that interaction with the customer. And what I have found is always being upbeat, respecting people, learning how to say hello and thank you in their language just for kicks. You know, people, they love that, and it does show respect. And I can't make all, I've got four stores, I can't be in all of those, but if I want the people that I've hired to treat those customers the same way that I would if I was doing every single transaction, you have to show them the respect and teach them that if they're respecting the business and the other people that they work with, then the business, just the personality of the business is so much better. People are proud of where they work. They want to take care of it. They have a reputation. They want to deserve and continue to earn that reputation and live up to it. So, you know, that's all part about having a business philosophy, teaching people this is how we do it here. If you want to be a part of it, you want to be a part of our team and part of us, this is what we expect and this is how we do it. And if you don't, if you're a problem, then we're going to get you out. Go be a problem for our competitor.
Sure. Well, you know, the thing that I feel just translates through your entire book is actually a subtitle in your book, Respect Them and Earn Their Trust. I mean, that to me just resounds throughout your entire book and obviously through your philosophy, and definitely earning their trust makes them listen, makes them, you know, buy into things, makes them see your vision and follow it through, making it their own vision. I think that's just phenomenal. You know,
things, having a philosophy and not just talking it, but really walking it and letting people see it is, you know, basically being more transparent in. And you talked about that other guy earlier. In my business, we share all of our sales numbers on a daily and a weekly and a monthly basis with every person on the team, what our food costs, our labor costs, whether we increased or decreased from last year, how service numbers are doing. All of that stuff is transparent, and we track it. And so we show people this is what a great job looks like. This is what great performance is. And then we celebrate it. We have most valuable people. Every month we pick a most valuable person from each store, and they get a bonus along with their name on a plaque. Every year we pick several most valuable people of the year. We give them a shirt embroidered with their name and MVP 2010 on it. And all this stuff doesn't cost me much money, but let me tell you how thrilled somebody is to have that shirt on, you know, in front of customers, and you know, that stuff is important as far as recognizing and respecting and taking care and recognizing people. That stuff totally works.
Sure. You know, you talk about densely populated areas, and you mentioned in your book, you know, Atlanta and Miami and New York and Houston. How well does this philosophy translate across the heartland of America, where there aren't a lot of immigrant workers? Does the same philosophy translate to the minimum wage employee in those markets?
Well, you know, in my experience, and I do know a lot of Domino's franchisees across the country, and one thing that I see that's a pretty common trait is that the people that have the most successful businesses are the ones that make sure that every person in the business is successful. If I have a delivery guy that isn't making money for some reason, then, and it could be the way he's dressing or acting or talking or something he's doing at the door that's affecting his tips, if I can make him successful, he'll be happy. He figures out how to take care of that customer, his wage goes up. Now, how can that not translate? You know, and yes, a lot of it is about the immigrant workers, but a lot of it is about just the entry-level minimum wage people. I have had such incredible experiences by having some kid who's 16 years old, 17 years old, come into our business. This is the first job that they've ever had. 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 years later, they're either still with us or they call me up and they tell me, you know something, working at your store as my first job was one of the things that gave me confidence and taught me how the world works. And I think it's an integral part of why I'm successful in college today. You know, when you have somebody call you up and tell you that, you know, then, and being in business isn't just about being in business. It's being a part of a community. It's providing a career and a living wage for a lot of people that work in your business. It's just more than, you know, how much money did I make this week?
Sure, it definitely is. In your book, it's just a fabulous book. I got it through Amazon. It was not expensive. It was I think $20, $25. Actually, it was $18 through Amazon. I highly recommend everybody pick up a copy of the book and read it. It's, if you're in franchising, as all our audience is, at any level, I think this book would be super beneficial. There's a lot of good tables in here. It's just a great book. Very good job.
Can I talk about a couple, just something else I want to toss out before we run out of time? I have gotten some of the criticism about this book was that it appeared or felt kind of Domino's-centric. And for that, I can only say that's the only thing I know. So, but the reality, and I think as you pointed out, the principles and the lessons in this book are not Domino's only. These will translate to absolutely any business. And I use this book as a reference as much as I do any others. My main Hire the American Dream book has probably 20 stickers hanging out of it and is all ragged. And, you know, I continue to refer to this thing, and it continues to help my business. The other thing I'd like to point out is I do have some forms and checklists and things that have been useful in my business. And, you know, when you buy the book, you can go onto the website and download those forms into Microsoft Word and adapt them to whatever business it is that you've got.
I think that's a great resource. And like I said, I've read the book from cover to cover, and I did not feel that it was it only applied to Domino's. I thought it could apply to any type of business. And I know from my own experience and perspective, it made me think back to the times when I was a franchisee and how I could have used some of these principles and philosophies that I might not have been as astute at as I should have been. I think it's a very good book. I think it's a definitely must-have, a must-read for any business owner and certainly any franchisee and franchisor that's out there. And talking about, you know, franchisors and different franchise systems, what other franchise concepts do you feel are best in class outside of Domino's?
I have been very impressed with Jersey Mike's. They are based out the shore in New Jersey, and mm-hmm. I've met some of those guys and seen some of their stores, and I'm just very impressed with the culture and the resources and the support that that the franchisor gives to their franchisees, and I've been very impressed with that. I'm familiar with another one of these burger brands that's up and coming, Smashburger. I'm impressed with the setup that they've got. So, you know, but I think Jersey Mike's is the one I've had the most familiarity with, and I'm really impressed with them.
And I think that's very interesting looking at it, you know, through a franchisee's eyes, because a lot of times, you know, franchisors look around and they try to emulate something and probably should spend a little bit more time asking franchisees, what other brands do you perceive as being best of class, and then trying to emulate it, as I said, through their eyes. I think that's some very good insight. You know, you've achieved a lot, obviously. You were successful even before you became a Domino's franchisee, working in the Washington area with Domino's. Then, of course, in 89, you became a franchisee with Domino's. You've grown. I think in the book it says that you now have locations up in Connecticut. That obviously has to be a little bit different than having stores in Manhattan. Where does Dave Melton go from here? What does the future hold for you?
Well, you can always do what you're doing better. So it's constantly evaluating and comparing yourself to yourself. I'm not all that anxious to, and I certainly have had the opportunity to buy more stores. And, you know, we sort of made a conscious decision that for the lifestyle that we wanted and the work environment that we wanted, I didn't want to run an office. I didn't want to run five supervisors. I know pretty much every person in every one of our stores. I can, you know, I get to go around and drop in unannounced, see how things really are in my business, and, you know, and talk to people. And so the size of the company that we have is basically where we want it to be. So, you know, in the future, there's always sort of that talk. I've been in this business now for 29 years, and it's inevitable. You have to look at, you know, where am I going to be down the road? What's the exit strategy? Do I sell? We don't have kids, so, you know, that's not an option. But so the answer to the question is I don't really know, other than continuing to run our business the best way that we can is going to keep us busy for a little while yet to come.
Well, that's great. You know, I'm very tuned into family-run businesses. A lot of franchisees have families involved in the business. I know you work closely with your wife, Angie, on this, and you have distinct responsibilities based on what I read in the book.
Yep.
Words of advice for franchisees that are working with their spouse or another family member, because as we know, and it is a partnership, there a lot of times are problems with partnerships. Do you have some words of advice for business owners that are out there listening with respect to that?
Well, you know, it is certainly good to have clearly defined roles, and but one of the most important would be one that husbands everywhere recognize, which is yes, dear. Kind of, you know, you have to have a level of respect for what the other person is getting done. You know, Angie is more of our administration part of things, and she's comfortable with routines, and she knows that something's got to be done on the second Tuesday of the month, where I'm not even sure it's Tuesday. I'm more of the whack-a-mole. Something pops up, and I deal with that. So having both of those kind of skill sets has covered a pretty wide range of bases for us.
That's excellent advice. You know, I was reading at the beginning of the book, and I think this is what really intrigued me right from the start, was even in the foreword of the book by David Brandon, the chairman and chief executive officer at Domino's, when he came on board and realized there was 158% turnover.
Yep.
And he, with his person that was in charge of human resources, and asked a question of, you know, how to correct it, and basically was told, it is what it is. Get used to it. And of course, he promptly replaced that person. And I, you know, as Joe Caruso always says to me, he says, you know, if you keep kissing toads and all you get is warts, stop kissing those toads. And and I just think it's a great thing. And then you emphasize it in the book, and you emphasized it today by saying, you know, if they're not part of a team, if they're not working towards the vision and the goal, then they need to get out of the way, which, of course, goes to that old adage, you know, lead, follow, or get out of the way. And sometimes it does, you know, moving people out of the way. But some people might look at that as being too harsh, giving people an opportunity to correct their ways. And I know you use a philosophy, as mentioned in your book, that General Electric uses a lot, which, of course, is keeping their bottom 10% warned so that they have a way of improvement. Can you kind of elaborate on that a bit?
Absolutely. You know, getting things done is a matter of creating the right kind of incentives and motivation for people to do it. To get a person to improve, they have to understand that what they're doing now isn't meeting expectations. Expectations have to be clear on both sides, and people can expect things from me as well as I am expecting them to do certain things. So being clear and upfront and unequivocal with this is what we expect from you. Be on time, be in your uniform, take care of customers, you know, carry a pizza flat. It's all the basic stuff that you've got to tell people to do. If someone doesn't meet expectations, it should be perfectly clear before they don't meet the expectation, they should know what the ramifications are. If you don't show up for work, then, you know, the first day you're going to get a written warning, the second time you're going to be suspended, the third time you're gone. It can't be a surprise to people. So being clear with your expectations from a disciplinary and a training aspect just really makes your job a lot easier.
Absolutely. You know, today's, as you mentioned earlier, you know, in today's economy, you know, things are changing, things are uncertain, et cetera. A lot of people within business are looking at various changes in marketing, taking different direction. And I'm, as you might know, I am really entrenched within social media. How much is social media today involved in your local marketing efforts, or is it?
It is, and it's obviously it's one of those things that the more you put into it, the more you can get out of it. My stores do have Facebook presences. I am guilty of not sort of putting as much stuff up there as might be good. But one of the parts, and the social media part of it is huge. The electronic media end of things, we do a lot of text message marketing, email marketing to people who have used us at Domino's.com. About 40% of my sales are coming in over Domino's.com, which is enormous, and we love that.
Sure.
And, you know, the computers that we have, if you haven't ordered from Domino's and tried the pizza tracker, customers really like that. It takes a lot of that emotional angst about what's happening out of the equation, because you see when your pizza's loaded in the oven, you see when it's dispatched and the name of the delivery person when it leaves the store, because all that stuff is web-enabled and connected. So, technology is more and more a part of our business, and the social media part of things, there's Foursquare, there's Twitter, there's Facebook. The more you do on this stuff, the more it benefits you.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, you say talk about technology and we talk about pizza, and 20 years ago, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, probably a lot of people would have said the two don't mix. And yet, clearly, the way Domino's is doing it and the way you're doing it, it certainly does. And I don't think anybody could have a conversation about social media and Domino's in the same sentence and not mention the incident that occurred last year that was filmed and put up on YouTube. And I definitely admire Domino's corporate for acting so quickly, but more importantly, being ahead of the game by monitoring it, because certainly that could have been a very devastating experience.
Well, it actually was, because, I mean, that cost us millions and millions of dollars in sales, and the fact that it even still comes up and it still lives out there sucks. And it's,
yeah.
You know, this was a couple of complete goofballs that you know, it's just so frustrating to that lives on. And obviously it's such a teeny episode and doesn't reflect on the pizza industry or Domino's on the whole, except for the fact that, boom, all of a sudden it was everywhere.
Sure. But, you know, but the flip side of that is all the good stuff that's done also lives on. And I guess that's just, you know, proof that we need to do, business owners need to do more and more each day of the stuff that lives on, because it certainly will outweigh the negatives in the long run, I believe.
I agree, and I like that, and that is sort of another lesson, which is, you know, don't ever put anything or do anything that you wouldn't want to have splattered on the front page. So that's one way to behave yourself.
Certainly. Absolutely. Well, Dave, I really appreciate the time today. I know you're in Virginia celebrating your dad's birthday. Hey, please extend our birthday wishes to your father as well. We'd love to have you down the road be a guest again on Franchise Today, maybe even bring in Angie. I would love to talk to both of you on the air and get the perspective of spouses working together. But I really appreciate your time with us today and being my guest, and look forward to those future discussions.
Thank you very much. I hope your listeners got something out of it. I appreciate your kind words about the book. If anybody's in Manhattan and would like to see our stores, we would always invite them to come by and see them. And you can contact me through the website of the book, hiretheamericandream.com. And I appreciate the day, Paul, very much. Thank you.
Same here, Dave. Well, next week on Franchise Today, co-producer Joe Caruso has lined up what I believe is another fantastic show. We're right in the middle of football season, playoffs, and with our eyes on the Super Bowl, and we kind of have a little bit of a sports angle on next week's show. As my guest will be Michael Stone. Michael's a former professional NFL football player turned entrepreneur, business promoter. During his 7 years in the NFL, Mr. Stone played for the New England Patriots, the Arizona Cardinals, and the New York Giants. And upon retirement, he founded Allied Athlete Group, the premier private membership organization for professional athletes. And Mr. Stone's ability to reach professional athletes, coupled with his ability to identify business opportunities, has allowed him to bring investments to the athlete community. And I'm really looking forward to it. Joe did a great job putting that show together as well. I'd also like to take an opportunity to thank Deb Evans and B.J. Emerson, who were my guests just before the holiday season took root. And we talked about social media, franchisor's perspective, and that show, as well as this show today, shortly at the end of it, as well as all other shows on Franchise Today, are available on demand at www.blogtalkradio.com/Franchise Today Show. So until next week, I'm Paul Segretto, wishing you all the best in this great thing we call franchising. Franchise Today is out.